Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the 26th of April, and it's the Registration Abuse Policies call. On the line, we have James Bladel, Fred Fellman, Faisal Shah, Greg Aaron, Barry Cobb, Robert Hutchinson, Wendy Seltzer, and for staff, we have Marika Koenig, Margie Milam, and Glenda Saint-Jerry, myself. Have I left off anybody? Thank you, Greg. Over to you.
Thank you, Glenn. Before we dive back into public comments, let's briefly go into the schedule that I sent around late last week. Marika had noted that the deadline for Brussels, as far as documents that have to be discussed by the community, is May 31st, if we count business days. However, this document has already gone through its public comment, so it could be due even later. So we're going to ask, we've asked Chuck Gomes, the head of the GNSO Council, just to ask about the timing and also when we want to have this issue scheduled for council discussion in Brussels. So anyway, for now, I think the schedule that I posted up to the list is fine. It basically means we have four meetings to go through the rest of the public comments and at the same time also work on the document. So May 24th is going to be our last call for changes, and we want to publish it at the end of May, beginning of June, if at all possible. So are there any questions about scheduling? All right. If not, that just means we need to move along in our meetings, and it also requires us to deliver edits to the document in a timely fashion. Marika, I was wondering, we've got the last draft which is up on the website. Would you like to prepare a new draft? Because I guess the new draft needs to include the chapter with a public comment summary. Also, does that draft need to contain the constituency statements as appendices?
This is Marika. That's a choice that the working group can make. I mean, in previous reports, we have included also, you know, full public comments in appendices, but, you know, I think if we provide the links, that might be sufficient as well. I don't know. I mean, the question is, of course, if you put it in the document becomes very long. If you want to translate it, you know, gets as well into the question of additional cost and time for translation, having additional pages, well, you know, that information could be provided as well by direct links. So it's, I think it's a question for the working group whether they would like to have full comments there, or, you know, just constituency statements, or just summary and analysis with, you know, clear links to where the different submissions can be found.
Okay. Yeah. Translation is something I hadn't thought of before. So the precedent is to certainly include links to all public comments and also include the constituency statements, because this is a GNSO document. Is that pretty much the precedent?
This is Marika. Actually, the precedent has changed slightly. I think the last few initial reports, we've just provided the summary and links, and actually haven't included the full statement in the annexes, but just provided the links to the public comment forum, or will provide a link as well to the constituency statements that are then posted on the wiki. And also, as this is not a, you know, a formal working group, and we haven't really specifically requested constituency statements apart from those that were submitted as part of the public comment forum, they're actually, you know, I think, part of the public comment forum as such. So if you make them separate, you might have to do that for all comments. I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. Well, unless there are any objections, then we have, I guess, a page or two with links to all of the comments. One thing I would suggest, Marika, is if we have a page with all the links, that those be very clear about who the comments are actually from. On the comments message board, sometimes it's clear, and sometimes it just says who posted it, but it's not stating who the comments are actually by. So, for instance, if a particular constituency sent comments, and let's clearly identify those as a statement from a constituency, not from an individual who happened to mail them in. How's that sound?
Greg, what I can do, this is Marika again, is in the summary and analysis, there's the list of those that have submitted contributions, which does identify, for which it consider it relates to constituency or stakeholder group statement. Maybe an idea would be to include the links there so people can click directly from there and they see as well who's the, you know, the person or the entity that has submitted the comments.
Okay. All right, let's do that then, as long as they're clearly called out and findable by readers. I think we're good.
Greg, just a point. Just looking at the page, it looks like every comment summary on the page actually calls out the organization in the description.
It's been inconsistent across boards, which is why I mentioned it.
In this case,
it depends on how the people have self-titled their stuff. So anyway, that sounds good. Well, it sounds like we're covered. All right. Now, there are a few items from last week, one of which was Margie was going to give us some background on what resellers are obligated to do, and she has pointed out some material, and it actually looks like it's summarized in two paragraphs in the non-lawyer's guide. To ICANN contracts. Margie, would you like to go ahead?
Sure. Can you guys hear me okay?
Sounds good.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, I guess the question was where drawers would be obligated for the acts of others. And this document, the non-lawyer's guide, was put together at the request of the at-large community, because they thought that it would be useful to have something that explains the rights and obligations. And it's helpful in this particular case because it actually addresses the issue that we were talking about a couple weeks ago. And so there's two areas that deal with resellers. The first area deals with common controlling interest. And so if there's registrars that are owned by, have common interests, there might be, have common ownership, that there's provisions in the RAA that deal with, and even though they are separate legal entities, they might have additional obligations because of the close relationship to affiliated companies. But not all registrars actually have affiliates. And so the RAA actually talks about where there is a common controlling interest of some of the affiliated registrars. One registrar might be in breach of the RAA based upon the acts of one of its affiliates. So that's kind of one area. And then the other area deals with resellers, and I think that was the question that we were talking about here on the group. The 2009 RAA actually included additional language related to resellers, and the RAA prior to that didn't have any reseller-related obligations. And it essentially just requires registrars to do additional steps when they have resellers. One, they actually require that their reseller agreements have certain provisions. So if there is a reseller and there's an agreement, the registrars are obligated to make sure that they have that they have certain provisions in their reseller agreement. And then there's also specific requirements related to privacy or proxy registration services. if the reseller offers them, then the reseller needs to do one of three things: either deposit the information for in escrow, deposit the information with the registrar, or post a notice that the information is not being escrowed. And so that's also part of the RAA. And then the last part of that relates to that if a reseller is violating any of these provisions, the registrar agrees to take compliance and enforcement action. So those are the only areas where there may be some requirement related to resellers.
Okay. Thank you, Margie. Does anybody have any questions for Margie?
This is Barry. Just this doesn't necessarily need to be answered here. I'm just curious, with the RAA working group, is anybody aware of any other items that are being discussed in that forum about, with regard to resellers?
I can answer that, Greg. Yes, they are considering a number of amendments, and some of them do relate to resellers. So at the moment, they're in the process of identifying the list of topics for potential RAA amendments, and there are some provisions that relate to resellers.
Okay, great. I'll go seek those out. Thank you.
Okay. Does anyone else have any questions about the material?
Wendy.
Go ahead, Wendy.
I would just note that these provisions are, in some sense, less effective than general fraud considerations because they are only enforceable by ICANN. So if ICANN is not being an active enforcer, the end user who may be harmed by some of these things has no recourse.
This is Greg. I'm raising my hand. So as far as these provisions, my assumption is that the registrar is actually responsible for the compliance action, monitoring and compliance, unless ICANN compliance sees a problem with some particular name, since they'd go talk with the registrar about it. But I don't see, in this situation, I don't see ICANN going to resellers.
No, ICANN can't, but if ICANN isn't doing anything that puts pressure on the registrars, then the registrar has little incentive to comply, or rather those that don't comply aren't punished for it.
Right.
Those that don't enforce compliance of their resellers.
Yes, policy without enforcement is an issue. Okay. Anything else, anyone? Okay. All right. If not, let's move on to the other item from last week, which was about slamming. I'd like to say a word up front that the slamming issue we're talking about is a new topic for this report, which is the practice of sending notices to potential registrants and enticing them to register a domain name. So that's different than the transfer issue we've discussed in the past and in the initial report. I'll also say that we have limited time available to discuss this topic. I would like to keep the discussion very focused. Now, what we have so far is a draft from Barry and then marked up by James. There are a couple of questions about, I think, do we want to address this issue and is it in scope? That's one of the questions that James raised. The issue being that this is it's certainly a slimy practice, I think we all agree, but this is before domains are even created, and what, if any, role does ICANN have? So let's discuss the scope issue first, which is a gating factor. Let me open up the floor. Barry and James, jump in anytime.
Okay, this is Barry. I guess I was expecting other people to comment. When no domain is registered in this event, I would agree it probably is out of scope. My concern is when a registrant is takes action against this type of deception to register a domain. Once that domain is registered, it does seem to me that it does fall in scope. We'll probably debate this till the cows come home. I guess I'm just kind of taken back a little bit because, again, this seems like one issue where both sides of the fence recognize that this is a problem. Certainly, registrants out there are being taken advantage of, and yes, we can debate as to whether this is just a deception versus hardcore marketing / selling. I don't know. I think that there are harms out there, and all of us on this call that have talked about it, and those in the community are veterans of the domain industry and know that when they receive these that they can just shred it and ignore it. My concern is for the 90% of registrants out there that don't have the street IQ that we do, that actually are deceived and do take action against these. And so, yes, is there really harm? Maybe not. They're getting domain names for an inflated price, whatever that percentage is. I guess my only question back to James and to the contracted parties is why you guys wouldn't be more on board, at least wanting to put this forward to the council for at least some kind of notice and or further research, because from my perspective, if I were a registrar, I wouldn't want these deceptive practices to be going on out there, because that potentially takes business away from me for, as an example, I'm going to use me as an example. I'm a customer with GoDaddy, and I received one of these notices. I actually took action against that notice, and as I mentioned last week, I was just smart enough to not register it through that deceived practice, but to go through GoDaddy to get that domain. But more often than not, the inexperienced registrant will more than likely go through the deceived practice to try to register that domain. Therefore, taking business away from the current registrar that they work with or associate themselves with. So, I don't know. At the very least, what I would like is that in the draft that I included four different recommendations that we just put that out onto the list, and if we could do a quick vote like we did with the other sections and see where we stand. And I still think that it warrants populating it into the paper. If at the very least, hopefully the recommendation that we come out of this group is that, we try to find resources to do more actual research for it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Barry. James?
Hi. And thanks, Barry, and I appreciate you putting this draft together. I think I mentioned on the list that I'm struggling a little bit with this. I think that we recognize that this is out there. It's going on. It's a slimy practice. It certainly is something that we would not want to lose customers to. But I think that the question, once again, it just comes down to, is this, a pitch that ICANN should be swinging at? With everything that we have going on, everything, I think research would be good. I would love to have some data either from ICANN or from an outside party on how prevalent this is and what kind of magnitude of a problem we're talking about. But I think I have some issues just in terms of, you know, the fundamental nature of this. It is, as Barry mentioned, it is an attempt to prey upon, you know, novice or unfamiliar registrants. It's kind of like the guys at the airport running the pirate taxi cabs, or, you know, maybe even the stereotypical shakedown for insurance money for a mom and pop store, so that, you know, we don't, you know, in case something would happen to that nice domain you have there. You know, I think I'm really just struggling with the scope issue and whether or not there's action here or threat of action. You know, I think we put down in section, I think very, very accurately captures some of our discussion in one of the lower sections here, and I don't want to take up too much time, Greg, but, you know, if we look down at the section highlighted, is it within ICANN scope with some tests there? You know, I think that's pretty straightforward, and perhaps we could even press upon Mr. O'Connor to make a pretty flowchart, because he's very good at organizing these things visually. But, you know, in my opinion, hello? Hello? I'm sorry, I hear some background notifications there, but anyway, I don't want to spend too much time on this or belabor these points. I think that the draft and the comments, I think, capture, you know, the issue here. And, Barry, I don't think it's a reluctance to take this on necessarily as much as a recognition that there are problems and harms occurring, and not everything is, you know, germane for ICANN. So it's more of a recognition of ICANN's limitations as opposed to any kind of a discount or diminishment of the harm. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. This is Greg. I'd raise my hand. What James said at the end is also true for me. I don't discount the impact of it. What I'm wrestling with is whether it's in scope or not. I mean, personally, I don't think those tests are probably complete. I mean, just because it eventually touches a contracted party doesn't necessarily mean it's within scope, for example. It's not how a domain is being created. It's not a you know, about the process. You know, are you having a sunrise, or, you know, all those kinds of things, which are definitely kind of in scope. I think it's before the domain's being created. I think it's a lousy practice, perhaps. We don't know how much it's being done. On the other hand, I think in these kinds of issues, we have seen that where appropriate, regulators or law enforcement does get involved. We've seen that with some of these deceptive advertisements through the years. And I think there's a place for ICANN to make sure that registration issues are done on, you know, practices are done on a level playing field. For example, registrants should be given the opportunity to transfer their domain names to their registrar of choice, and therefore should have some mechanisms to be able to do that. But I don't know how far ICANN's role as far as general consumer protection goes. ICANN, at base, is not a consumer protection organization exactly. And in this case, I think, I mean, I'm concluding that for me, this kind of falls outside of scope as far as policy making. So I question whether it should go to further research. So those are my thoughts. Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Faisal. I guess the only thing I would say is, I guess I may just really quickly a couple of things. One is that if you look at the definition of uses, we have it. Well, we have cause of actual and substantial harm as a material predicate as such harm. I would argue that the fact that it hasn't been registered yet but will be registered is a material predicate of the harm, which is the actual registration, and it does cause actual and substantial harm. And I think that I think we could recommend best practices by which we can ask the registrars to, like I said in my last call, perhaps even educate resellers as to, you know, these kinds of practices. So I would actually be in favor of further investigation of this issue.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? James?
Yeah, Greg, it's James speaking. It's not that I think I would also cautiously support an issues report or some further investigation, either by ICANN or by by an outside independent research organization. I just want to make sure that we're not taking away from, you know, we talked about our calendar, we talked about all the things we have going on now with ICANN, and I just want to make sure that we're not contending for staff resources that are already very thin.
Yeah, and by the way, asking for an issues report is the path down to a PDR, a PDP.
Well, it's not necessary.
Not,
not
necessarily, but
yeah.
But that's it's more than just asking for an issues report is probably more than just research.
Okay, well, maybe we shouldn't say issues report. Maybe we should say research. I know all PDPs have to have an issues report, but not necessarily the other way around. So.
Yes, true. I see Wendy's hand up.
Just very quickly to echo the concerns that while this is an important issue, I think outside of ICANN's scope to remedy it.
Okay. Thank you, Wendy. Okay. This is Greg. I have a suggestion. We have four draft recommendations, and we could do a straw poll at this point. Let me read them off. The first recommendation is to recommend nothing. The second recommendation is that the GNSO pass the issue over to the CCNSO for research, investigation, and potential remedial action. And that is because we think the issue is predominantly with ccTLD domains. Third recommendation is that the GNSO monitor in the generic space and designate a team of ICANN staff to conduct research and create education for awareness. The fourth recommendation is that the group recommend the initiation of PDP. Of this, in conjunction with fake renewal notices. And I see some handy polling functionality coming up.
I'm trying to keep up. Let me see if I can make this work.
Oh, no.
It's really good fill there. We need a joke or something just to fill out the time.
This is Barry. I just, you know, for the sake of time, I just ask that we kind of, if we could just put this poll onto the list like we've done with the others, and that way we can just move forward. Thank you.
Well, Marika, how long will it take you to do it?
Well, I can just, you know, we can just continue discussing on other issues until I get the poll working, and then people during the call can just indicate their vote, and we can come back to it.
Okay.
I haven't done it. Let's let Marika
work on it. In the meantime, we can move on. The next step would be to look at the public comments and go on with those. I am going to give you the link here to the public comment forum. And remind me where we left off. We did the WIPO comment. I think we did the registries.
Uh,
I think we only did WIPO. I don't think we covered the registry stakeholder group statement separately from the summary.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay, well, I can summarize that one quickly. Basically, the registry stakeholder group said that registration issues do need to be defined carefully. Use is a very useful differentiator, and it's a good test for whether something's within consensus policymaking scope or not. And therefore thinks that use issues such as malicious use of domain names is out of scope. The stakeholder group supported the cyber squatting recommendation, assuming and noting that this particular recommendation did not try to deal with other domain creation rights protection mechanisms, which the working group commented on separately. And it's not in favor of discussing RPMs at this time, the additional RPMs. Thought that the group made a good decision regarding gripe sites and so forth. Talked more about malicious uses of domain names. Definitely supports the best practices that the group has recommended. Gave some background on why I thought the binding practices were out of scope. The group supported the two recommendations about who is access, and felt strongly that the uniformity of contracts PDP is ill-advised. Thought it would pursue an undefined problem and thinks that consensus policymaking is a better, safer, and existing mechanism rather than trying to pursue something which is general and does not define a problem to be solved. So that's the capsule summary. Does anyone have any questions about it? Okay, in the meantime, you can look at the slamming poll, which is up on the Adobe Connect. We have 4 votes so far. Okay, I see 5 votes. If you haven't voted, please do so. Is there anyone who is on the phone but is not on Adobe Connect?
Yes, Barry.
Okay. And Barry, which one would you vote for? Just so we know.
Well, to be honest, I'll take any one except A. Like I said, I'm driving right now, so I'm not in a position to be voting, but, at the very least, because there's scope issues, I'll just take the more research one.
Okay. All right, so Barry, can you put yourself on mute, please? Barry. Okay, thank you. Okay, so we have 6 votes now. Somebody hasn't voted yet. If you don't want to vote, just click no vote so we know that you participated. Okay. I'm going to give this one more minute, so consider this your last call to participate in the straw poll.
Greg, this is Barry. Again, I'm going to ask that this go to the list because there are several members that aren't on the call that won't get the opportunity to vote. Thank you.
Okay, this is a straw poll at this point. Now, Bob says he voted no, but it's not recording. So at this point, I think that's seven votes. We have four for no recommendation, and we have three for monitoring. And Fred, can you explain your comment? You said this is a limited vote.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think it's worthwhile. I mean, this is a much larger group. This isn't representative of the group. There are six of us on this call, so I just think it's
right. This is a straw poll, Fred. This is not a binding thing. We're trying to feel out where the group is. Okay, so we have four who said recommend nothing. We have three who want more research.
Which four? I'm confused. I thought James and I and Barry and Fred would be four for the further investigation. Has James flipped over to no recommendation?
Yeah, this is James. I'm kind of torn between the two right now, Fred. I'm on the fence between recommendations or issues. I think the problem I have there is that the recommendation for research specifies ICANN staff, and I think I would like to see it say something like ICANN staff or an independent research firm.
Yeah, that would be fine with me.
I'm sorry?
I think that would be great. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, other than that, I think that would probably make me feel more comfortable with the idea of more research. Oh, now they're changing even more.
people are shifting. All right. So.
Yeah.
All right.
If we made that change, then I would be fine with that idea. I'm concerned about overburdening staff right now between now and Brussels.
Okay. All right. So now we've got votes narrowed down into two areas. Let's take this to the list. What I can do is post up the two recommendations as they currently stand. We can ask for some edits to those and see what we get. Okay. All right. Thanks everybody for participating in the straw poll. All right. Let's move on then. Let's go back to the public comments. We just went through the registry stakeholder group comments. I didn't hear any questions about those. So the next one would be the GoDaddy comment. And James, would you like to summarize it?
Sorry, what was that? You caught me multitasking.
Oh, sorry. The next public comment in line is the GoDaddy submission.
Okay. I don't have that handy, but I think that, I don't think there's any surprises there. And as much as I've probably echoed a lot of these in the call, and I don't think we've necessarily diverged from anything that's contained within the registrar stakeholder group comments. Let me just pull it up here real quickly. I think we addressed some of the ideas that there are certain types of abuse that, while they may be problems, they are outside of scope. GoDaddy has made significant investments in combating abuse on our own and working, collaboratively with industry consortiums. And I know Greg and some of the other folks know that there are a lot of different groups out there that we participate in, as well as, maintaining a 24/7 team to handle these issues internally. And we think ICANN, you know, primarily is a facilitator, bringing people together who maybe have different perspectives on abuse problems to help coordinate anti-abuse efforts. But I think ultimately the scope issue boils down to we don't think criminals necessarily respect contracts, and so that, contract compliance is possibly not the most effective anti-abuse mechanism that, you know, you can put at that. I think we put in there that we cautiously support some rework, refresh work on the UDRP. We'd like not only for there to be some discussion about how effective it's been versus cyber squatting, but we'd also like to address or at least examine some other issues regarding the UDRP in that effort, particularly how UDRP providers can modify their supplemental rules. It's not entirely off topic because I think that the changes in the supplemental rules have almost really threatened the U in UDRP, which stands for uniform, and I think that we're starting to enter an era where the uniformity of the panelists' procedures is starting to diverge a little bit. With regard to rights protection mechanisms and new GTLDs, we'd like to see how these play out in new GTLDs before any discussion of moving them into incumbent GTLDs. I think that's just the conservative approach to making sure that we don't have any unintended consequences. And then I think with uniform contracts, uniformity of contracts, I think that, I had brought up the indemnification issue. I think that, I think we're generally against this idea because we don't feel, one, that it would be necessarily effective against abuse, and two, that we feel that it would be, it could have other unintended consequences in the industry. So, I don't know. That's just a brief synopsis, Greg. I don't think that it's contrary to anything I've said on the calls posted on the list, and I think it mostly aligns with the Registrar Stakeholder Group comment as well.
Okay. Thank you, James.
And Wendy's laughing at me. I don't know what the... Can I ask her what the...
I'm sorry. I'm laughing at Marika's comment that she couldn't upload the file because it was protected.
Yeah, we're going to stop doing that now. Sorry. It was our policy to lock those PDFs when we put them up there, but, I know it causes Marika more headaches than any kind of abuse that it might solve. So abuse of our comments. So we're going to stop sending protected documents to the comments forum. Sorry about that.
Okay. All right. Any questions for James? Okay, if not, we move to the next one, which was from George Kirikos, our former group member. Let me just run through it quickly. He thought that the recommendation for direct review UDRP, he thought it was biased in favor of complainants who already overwhelmingly win UDRPs. And if UDRP is to be revisited, it should be in order to address reverse domain name hijacking, and there should be formal contracts between ICANN and its providers. UDRP should not be a mandatory process, he thinks. Good luck with that, I think. Let's see. And then he goes on. He talks a little bit about reverse hijacking and so on. He then goes on to address front running. He thinks that it should be taken up by the group. He lists the reasons why. He doesn't offer any additional proof that front running is happening, however. C, gripe sites, he thought that was out of scope. D, fake renewal notices, better education is an obvious solution, he says. E, kiting. He says he thinks that's a non-issue since the excess deletions policy is now in place. Malicious use. Thinks that was out of. He thinks it's out of scope. Thinks the non-binding best practices is. He actually is against that one. And then he goes on to give some reasons why. So he thinks verified Whois is actually better. So Whois access, again, he's talking about verified Whois data, which is out of scope for this group. Uniformity of contracts. He says it's an attempt to compel creation of abuse policies in the agreements that goes beyond legal standards. So he's against that one and gives some reasons. Uniformity of reporting. He likes XML and generally likes it. Collection of best practices. He has concerns regarding the funding. And then he has some concluding remarks. And basically says leverage economics to deal with abuse. So that's a summary. Any comments, James?
Hi, Greg. James here, and I don't really have any comments on any particular items of George's comments. I just think that, you know, it's a very thorough and there's a lot of information here, and I certainly don't always agree with George, but I think that the I wish he had stayed involved with this group. I think he has. There are some interesting topics here that we could have maybe benefited from discussing as a group. I'm not saying that I would have come down on his side, but I just think it would have been interesting to work him into our deliberations. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, James. Anyone else? I'm not seeing anyone's hand. And as a reminder, as we go through the comments, if there's something that you think should be noted in our document, an idea or a point or a piece of data that someone brings up in the public comments, we can insert those into the document. So if there is something of note, please bring it up.
This is Faisal. I like the part where George indicates that that ICANN is a traveling circus. Maybe we should put that in.
Send in the clowns.
Okay.
This is Mikey. This is Mikey. I was actually going to make quite the opposite point. One of the things I think about George and some others in the ICANN community is that they score a lot of points against people who really, because of their jobs, can't defend themselves.
Okay. Thank you, Mikey. Anybody else? Okay. If not, let's move on. The next one is from Black Knight. I'm actually not familiar with Black Knight Solutions. I guess they're a a hosting and colo service.
They're McKaylee. It's McKaylee Mayline. You don't know McKaylee?
Not really.
Wow. Right. That's amazing. He's leading the IRTPB working group.
I stayed as far away from that as I could.
Oh, you're no fun. Some of us just love spending years at that.
Okay. So anyway, Black Knight calls itself a hosting and a co-location and brand protection service and an ICANN accredited registrar. Okay. So the comments are, as far as gripe sites and offensive domain names, they were against that on the basis of freedom of expression and thought it was too subjective. Domain name is basically an indicator string. Fake renewal notices. They say as a registrar, they've received complaints from registrants about those and would welcome actions or proposals to address it, and would support the group's recommendation at this point. Who is access? Let's see. Says that bad actors do abuse who is, and there needs to be... revisions to the current requirements need to be revisited, and also that compliance is needed on all registrars. And then also a comment above, which I can't find. As far as reporting, They support standardization and simplification of abuse reports, which was not, kind of a recommendation we made. It's unclear to me what he's actually talking about as far as abuse reports.
I think what he's really supporting is standardization. That's a theme that's come up in a couple of other working groups that McKaylee's working on, and I think he's basically just saying, yeah, me too.
Yeah, what he says is as a hosting provider, registrar, network operator, and colo provider, we receive abuse reports for activity of all types across our network. So I don't know if he's talking about malicious conduct or just the concept in general, I guess. Regarding UDRP, he says a review of the process as a whole would not be unwelcome. Any process should be reviewed from time to time to assess whether or not it's effective. Any review of UDRP needs to be balanced. And talks about some abuses he's seen. Front running, he says, without evidence, any further discussion is a waste of time and resources. And malicious use, he says, supports the concept of developing best practices. We strongly oppose any attempts to make such practices mandatory. Uniform practices would work in the favor of criminals, and uniform practices could prevent innovation. And that brings us to the end of his comments. Any notes on the Black Knight submission? Okay. None?
Wendy, I'll just suggest, since we've heard a couple of times the recommendation that UDRP review be balanced, we consider a note on that account.
Okay. Wendy, would you be able to suggest the right spot or some language that could be put into that section of the report?
Sure, I'll take a look. Thank you.
Okay, cool. Thank you. We'll put that down as an action item for the week. Okay. Any other comments on Black Knight's comments? If not, we move on to the next one, which is from CADNA, which is the Coalition Against Domain Name Abuse. Okay. Let me send the link up to the notes. There it goes. Okay. Okay. CADNA says cyber squatting is one of the issues that affects them and their members because their mission is protecting brands. And they did agree with the recommendation to look at the UDRP. Said that UDRP exists as a reactive rather than proactive means of combating cyber squatting. And they recommended that we also do a PDP to create a mechanism to prevent cyber squatting before cyber criminals can register infringing domain names. That strikes me as something we did do when we talked about the other rights protection mechanisms, which put up barriers before or at time of registration. So I think we did do that. Let's see. And then they said that the RPMs in the new TLD space are inadequate and as such should not be applied to the current gTLD space. So their objection is they don't go far enough. CADNA supports the recommendations regarding who is accessed, uniformity of contracts, and the meta issues. One aspect that emerged across each of those recommendations was the need for consistency across different entities. Consistency in policy is vital. All right, issues have resulted from lack of consistency. In terms of malicious use of domain names, CADNA agrees with the alternative view and thinks that ICANN should impose mandatory practices on contracted parties regarding the use of domain names. The recommendation for non-binding best practices is too soft. And they were disappointed to see that we refrained from recommending action on certain problems, namely front running. They said it seemed as though the group did not have enough information about these issues to provide informed advice on how to improve them. So they said, sure, monitor, as the report suggests, but actively also investigate and seek out the root of the problems. So those are the CADNA comments. Does anyone have any observations? By the way, you posted a note regarding recidivism.
Yeah, I think at some point when they were talking about the PDP, trying to be proactive, I was thinking maybe they might have been referring to some kind of recidivist type of mechanism where you can somehow get to these cyber criminals before they register, but I'm not sure, you know, unless it's some kind of a list or something. I'm not sure how you would do that.
So you're talking about serial abusers?
I think that might be. I thought that's kind of where they were coming from, but they weren't very specific in their comments. And I know that I don't know if Fred is still on the phone. If he's got some thoughts on the whole recidivist.
Yeah, I am on the phone. I mean, it's hard for me to read into what they're saying. That is the only thing that I could think about. That is one thing that is unaddressed in actually the report is, you know, some way of dealing with behavior that repeats.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments on CADNA's submission?
So I guess the only other thing I would say is, should we consider putting in not only monitoring, but maybe also investigating whether or not front running is an issue or not, since it's kind of where we're going with the slamming as well, right? Is it something that we should be thinking about in addition to also monitoring?
Well, let's go back to our document. And what it says. We've got a little background noise. Perhaps try putting yourself on mute.
This is the operator. I'm trying to identify where this noise comes from. Just a moment, please.
Okay, thank you. Now, in the meantime, our front-running recommendation follows. It is unclear to what extent front... thank you, that's better. It is unclear to what extent front-running happens, and the group does not have a recommended policy development... does not recommend policy development at this time. The group suggests that the council monitor the issue and consider next steps if conditions warrant. My recollection of the conversation was, other than one documented case, nobody's ever stepped forward with good documentation that front-running is actually happening. We also recognize that that might be a little tricky to demonstrate, depending on who's doing it. And it can be done by many different parties. What we tried to do in our recommendation was split the middle, which was say, it might be an issue, let's keep an eye on it, but we don't want to recommend that we start a bunch of process or more research, especially since the ICANN staff already did. They did do one study on it. It seemed to have some, there was some methodology issues brought up, but we went out in search of data. We just didn't find a lot of data to say that it was a problem. It wasn't that there was no data, it's just there was a complete lack of proof that it's a big deal. So any other thoughts, James?
Yeah, Greg, real quickly, it's James speaking. And I'm sorry if I'm duplicating or contradicting things that might be in our report. I just don't have it in front of me. But you know, there are several issues that could be confused with front running. Like I think a few registrars in the past have experimented with putting names on hold or in a cart. I think that with the AGP changes, that those kind of went away. And I think that there was also a question of there was some malware out there that was trying to gain access to registrar control panels and was also intercepting search terms. So I don't know if we can mention those in our report as possible things that had happened in the past that might have looked to a registrant or prospective registrant as front-running, but in fact were kind of third-party intercepts or attempts at other value-added services that were, kind of being painted with the same brush. So I just want to make sure that we have some mention of those in our report.
Okay. So would you like to examine that section again and see if the cart holds and those kinds of things were discussed? If not, would you like to recommend an insertion?
Yeah, I'll take a look at the report and make sure that there's something called out there, and if not, I will put together a few lines, a few sentences.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Any other comments on CADNA's submission? Okay. If not, we move on to the next one, which is from the Coalition for Online Accountability, sent in by Steve Metallitz. And it says as follows. First is who is. They liked the recommendation on accessibility. Well, actually, what he says is the commitment to publicly accessible and accurate who is data. We commented on accessibility. We specifically did not comment on accuracy. Because accuracy is something else that the council is looking at through studies. I think what we did do is say there are inconsistencies in the fields that are provided and so forth. So anyway, but they liked the recommendation and appreciated emphasis on the efforts of the ICANN contract compliance team, and liked the recommendation for an annual compliance audit of registrar contractual obligations. Said there should also be greater transparency about how ICANN compliance staff reacts to reports of noncompliance, and discusses some of the things we put in the report. And says that, by the way, some of these topics do bear on the registrar accreditation agreement. So that's it for who is. Second, they said regarding malicious use of domain names, COA participants note that copyright and trademark infringements carried out online may also fall into the category of malicious behavior, especially to the extent that these infringements are performed on a commercial scale and thus attract criminal liability. We agree that ICANN can and should do more to encourage accredited registrars and registries to enforce their terms of service and develop best practices to address these malicious uses. The discussion of registrar and registry terms of service and indemnification seems excessively deferential to the perceived concerns of these contracted parties. We note that this discussion does not point to a single instance in which a registrar or registry has been successfully sued by a registrant whose registration has been canceled based on violation terms of service. Three, best practices. Without necessarily adopting the views of the working group about particular issues on which I can do no more than call for best practices, COA does support the general recommendation that ICANN do more to promote development and dissemination of best practices, including structured funding mechanisms. Left to their own devices, the contracted parties too often lack either the motivation or the energy to undertake this work. In this regard, it is instructive that although over the past 9 years, the registrar accreditation agreement has always contained a commitment for registrars to abide by a code of conduct that the accredited registrars might develop by consensus. Such a development has never occurred. And that's the end. So comments there, James?
Yeah, if I could just jump touch on a couple of issues. One, the registrar code of conduct, I believe, is under development now, along with a registrar rights and responsibilities declaration or document as well. So I think, you know, that stuff is underway, as well as some registrar training, you know, that's mentioned in the RAA but hasn't been implemented to this point. There was a mention here about, I'm trying to hit all of the different topics that Mr. Vitalis raised here. There, you know, mentioned something about recommendations for compliance, annual compliance audits. I think there are the compliance efforts and audit schedule is posted on the compliance website, and it's different quarters. They address different topics, and I think that you know, if he's recommending changes to that schedule, he should maybe reference that schedule, or we should in our report. It's not just who is; they're auditing just about every aspect of registrar agreements. And there was one other point here that I wanted to just offer a thought here. I must have lost it. I had 3 points, and I think those two, and then there's probably another one that I'll be reminded of here shortly, so I'll lower my hand.
Okay. Thanks, James. This is Greg. I raised my hand. The comments say as follows. We note in this discussion, we note that the discussion, i.e. the report, does not point to a single instance in which a registrar or registry has been successfully sued by a registrant whose registration has been canceled based on violation terms of service. I'd like to draw attention to some careful wording there. It says, where a registrar or registry has been successfully sued. So I wonder how he's defining successfully.
Greg, that was the other point I wanted to raise.
Yeah, one could take that to mean a trial has taken place and a judgment has been rendered by a judge or a jury or whatever. And I would note that a lot of people sue people in order to get a work towards a settlement, and I guess settlements are more common than actual judgments. So some lawyers think that the mere act of filing that suit is a success criteria. In the cases we mentioned in the report, you know, the cases were dismissed in favor of the registries and the registrars, but it still costs the registries or registrars $80,000 to $100,000 per case to simply defend themselves from what was a spurious lawsuit. So successfully sued, I think there's a lot of variance about what that actually means in the document and maybe also in actual practice. Also, those cases were not about necessarily canceled domain names. One of the issues is also putting domain names on hold or suspending them. I'll speak also just for myself for a moment. I take exception to the statement that decontracted parties too often lack motivation or energy to undertake anti-abuse work. I think it would have been more appropriate to say some do, because I know I have spent personally a lot of my company's time doing some good work in this area. So I think that was a very broad and perhaps overgeneral statement. Okay. Anyone else?
Greg, just you reminded me of my last point, which was that sentence about successfully sued for the cancellation of a domain name. I think successfully is a qualifier. Also, cancellation, I think you pointed out, is one. I think that one of our examples is either putting a name on lock or even implementing a UDRP decision. You know, doesn't mean that they're going to be successful, but I think that the fact that, you know, registrars can be exposed for implementing, a decision that was rendered according to ICANN policy is a good reason why we need to not just dismiss this idea of indemnification. And also I do join you in saying that, you know, a lot of registrars have spent a lot of investments in dealing with abuse issues. And this doesn't necessarily translate into larger market share, more revenue, or higher profits. This is purely a cost driver, that we're absorbing to clean up our, you know, our base of names under management and, in fact, reach out to other registries and registrars and help them combat their abuse issues. So I do agree with you that saying that contracted parties, you know, as a whole are not interested or motivated. I think that our dollars and our efforts and our time speak otherwise to that.
Okay. Thank you, James. Anyone else? Okay. I don't see any hands, so we can move on to the next one. We've got just a couple more minutes, but maybe we can squeeze one more in. The next one is from Phil Corwin on behalf of the Internet Commerce Association. And it's actually fairly long. I don't know if we'll be able to get through it in the next couple of minutes, actually. Maybe we should tackle it at the top of the next meeting. So, let me just run through the action items we came out of today's meeting with. We did our straw poll, and we'll need to discuss the two positions that people were interested in. We'll send those up to the list for comment and edits. Marika, will you be able to, over the course of the week, provide a new version of the document, the master document for markup?
Yes, no problem.
Okay, great. Wendy is going to look at the UDRP language regarding balance. James is going to look at the front-running language to discuss the items he mentioned, like cart holds and other issues. And I don't know if anybody wants to add comments regarding the COA comments. James, for example, mentioned the compliance schedule on the ICANN website and so forth. Anything I'm missing?
Greg, this is James.
Yeah.
Yeah, real quickly. I'm not real comfortable with, you know, saying that anything meaningful resulted from our straw poll. I'm thinking that perhaps if we could convert that into a survey, while leaving the language of the recommendations as flexible as possible, I think we might get something a little more useful that we could, you know, and then if we choose to include that in our report, we can. So just a thought. I don't know if anybody on the call supports that, but there are a lot of folks that are absent from this call. Now, to be fair, there are a lot of folks that are absent on this call every week and then suddenly show up for the last day when we start to vote for or have surveys and stuff. But I would be more comfortable if we are going to exclude it or if we're going to include it, and if we did so based on something a little more formal than the straw poll.
Right. Well, and the idea is we did the straw poll to see what options people are interested in. Now we're going to put those options up to the list for further discussion. The language is there for comment and for editing. Which I think that's what you're interested in at this point. We haven't taken a vote on it in any formal way or measured consensus levels at this point. We're not nearly there yet. Is that okay?
Yeah, no, I think we're thinking the same things here, that, nothing, it's just helping kind of line up the choices for future surveys or consensus tests, and I'm fine with that approach.
Yeah, okay, no problem.
This is Mikey. Just to chime in a little bit, it seemed like we were moving consensus forward when we were talking about James's idea to broaden the language on who does the research, because James's concern, and I agree, is overburdening staff. So if we could maybe take a crack at revising the language before we go to a poll.
Yes, and I'm not suggesting we go to a poll yet, because I don't think we're far enough on the language.
Oh, okay.
For one of the items, as you mentioned, is do we want to do more research? If so, how should it be done? Should it be done by staff or someone else, et cetera? So we've got a fair amount of work to do. And as you see that language, again, it's a starting point. So then mark it up or introduce any more ideas as you think appropriate. This week was the first time we've seen that material, so we've got a little more work to do. Okay, so anyway, today we got through half of the detailed. We are now through half the detailed public comments, so we're making pretty good progress, I think. And we'll see how much of it we can get through next week. Any parting thoughts before we adjourn for today? Okay. Well, if not, thanks for attending, everyone. And look for some more discussion on the list this week. I encourage use of the list so we can be well prepared and move things forward on the next call. So thanks, and have a wonderful week.
Thanks, Greg. Great job.
Thanks, Mikey.
Thanks, Greg.
Take care, everyone.